welcome to the first episode by Over the Fence. I'm Stevie.
And I'm Soss.
And we're here today to talk with you about lockdown.
Yes.
Coronavirus, lockdown, all things entailed, where it's going afterwards.
Yeah, and some of like the really important factors, government related and social related, that we think we'd like to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So Soss, kick us off.
Yeah, well,
lockdown,
I mean, the big three.
The trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, we have literally had three of these.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd give a little bit of a personal background to them before we went into the more general information.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
I mean, for me personally, I fucking hated lockdown. I mean, like, that's not new.
Yeah, no, that's not new. No,
not new. First lockdown was horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, there's like a gap between like the people who found like the first lockdown the hardest and then the people who found the last lockdown the very hard one.
Me.
And yeah, for me personally, the first one was actually awful. I think I had a lot of I became a lot more aware of my own existence and my own mortality. Mm-hmm. I think as a young person, I'd never really thought about it. I was just having fun. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then someone telling me that a virus could potentially just kill us.
Yeah. It was pretty scary for a lot of people.
Yeah. And I was a smoker at the time, and it definitely made me think about it. Definitely made almost the guilt around health a lot more real, and a lot more, I think health anxiety was increased a lot.
Definitely. But I just think this idea of, if someone breathes on you too hard, you could die. Like,
that's so scary.
That was never an idea that was even in the mainstream. No one ever really thought about sanitizing every single time you enter and exit your house. Like, you maybe should, but
I never thought I was going to get ill after going to an event, like, which I'll think about now.
But even things like a concert.
Yeah.
Every time I leave a concert, in the back of your mind, did I catch corona?
Like, yeah. Mm. But how was the three lockdowns for you?
Yeah, well, to be fair, I thought the first two were pretty calm. The second one kind of didn't really exist for me. First one was pretty relaxed. I was just enjoying the summer, working a bit, making a bit of dollar, which was nice. And then I think this one has definitely been the hardest for me. I think at the beginning, there was just no end goal. We got put in this lockdown just before Christmas, and then it was like, when do we come back out? Do I get any of my second term of uni? Do I...
Yeah.
Am I going to get summer? Is this going to roll on till Christmas next year? Everyone was kind of at a loss, and I felt myself a bit at a loss, just when's this going to end?
Yeah.
But great support system at the uni. Well, not at the uni. With my friends at the uni.
Yes.
And just in general, I think now we've kind of got end sight. It's a bit easier.
Yeah, brilliant. So we've spoken a little bit about our own personal experiences.
Yeah.
And we would like to talk a bit, well, primarily actually.
The meat of the subject.
The meat of this episode is going to be government response, the certain things that they did, the things that we think were really inefficient.
Mm-hmm. How we just feel the government have handled it, and almost mirroring views that we've heard. Like, there's a lot of talk about politics now, I think, more than ever. A lot of people have an opinion on the government and what they're doing, and I think it'd be good to
just talk a little bit about it. So, I mean, one thing we definitely both really felt, I mean, I think everyone's feeling this, even if they haven't necessarily put it into words, is that the response in general, both from the government and, if I'm honest, from the public, was very half-hearted.
Yeah, it was so half-assed. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, like, even with this, like, stay indoors, stay at home, don't stay indoors.
Stay at home. Don't stay at home unless you want to stay at home.
Yeah, the fact that we even had three lockdowns. Yeah. The whole thing, just felt extremely inefficient.
I just remember being in France before I came home, and I remember as we were getting rushed out of France, the gendarmes were walking down the street with weapons, like, keeping everyone in, and I got back to England and it was like, sing happy birthday while she wash your hands, sing twinkle twinkle little star to kill the virus. It's like, what is this about? Like,
well, literally, because my family is living in Italy, and you have to have a piece of paper to leave the house.
Yeah, I know. And
and then here it was like
parties.
No, for sure.
I think in general the country's response can really be summarized by just this idea of being British and, like, being a first world country makes us significantly better and more able to deal with things than just everyone else. Like, we told to stay at home and we don't because we're British, you can't tell us what to do. And
yeah, and when we then want to discuss, for example, vaccinations within government decisions within the lockdown, it's almost like the approach from the British public was, no matter how bad this gets, we will be safe.
Yeah.
Someone is going to save us.
Oh, and, yeah, for
and
sure.
And the ironic thing is, that is exactly what happened. We
Very
ended
annoying.
Up in probably the majority of the pandemic or a lot of parts of the pandemic, we were in the worst
position. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, I mean, while we're on vaccines in general at this point in the podcast, Stevie, I've seen so much crap and so many interesting things as well, but a lot of crap on Instagram, mm-hmm. on Twitter, etc, etc, about the vaccine. So yeah. I just want to know what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I've seen a lot of the same. I think we're talking about the conspiracies, aren't
yeah.
we?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
fact that the government's trying to microchip us and that they're going to use this to like eventually kill us all or whatever. I understand and like I sympathise with people who
don't trust the government.
Yeah, and have conspiracies.
They're not wrong. The government hasn't always been right about everything.
And if I'm really honest, there was a bit of time where I really thought maybe this is the Matrix test. Maybe they're testing our conformity with the vaccine, see how far we go. But then I just can't really believe it. I think my kind of wary more comes from the rollout of the vaccine. Like, that's where I'm wary of the government's ability to actually roll out. They said, like, for example, by June, all adults are going to be vaccinated. And I just... maybe the first dose, but the second dose by June, I'm really not sure.
Extremely skeptical. I mean, yeah. I'm pretty skeptical as to whether, I hate to say this, but whether this is even going to work.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what do they say? 60 to 65% of a population needs to be vaccinated for it to be efficient.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, you're just going to carry on getting more mutations.
Yeah.
We live in such a individualist society that I can't believe that we're going to get 65% of British people to vaccinate themselves.
If we take uni just as a microcosm for, say, society at the moment, in terms of the amount of people that I've spoke to who are sceptical or don't really want the vaccine, that's like definitely over 50% of people who aren't really confident in the vaccine at all, whether it be its ability to kill coronavirus. Is that even the scientific way to describe it? Kill coronavirus? But you know what I mean? People just don't really trust the science behind the vaccine that much.
Well, there is the whole skepticism between, there are a lot of people that say there hasn't been enough time for a vaccine to have been created.
Yeah.
When we look at the history of like SARS vaccines and other vaccines that we've needed. But obviously, we've never had this many scientists working on one vaccine.
All this much funding going in.
Yeah.
All
resources
the research
was vaccine.
Vaccine. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. But just building on that more, I
still
think
we still haven't done enough testing. And that's, I mean, I don't want to say, and that's a fact. But like,
yeah.
I mean, I have read about it. You know
what
I mean? And like, then we had I mean, obviously, there's only a certain amount of testing that can be done. And which is why I am still pro-vaccine and I will still get my vaccine 100% when it comes out. However, is there going to be side effects? We don't know that. And there's no point of pretending
that
we know that.
No,
you know what I mean?
I completely agree. I think that's kind of more a communication point. If the government have just come forward and say, like, to date, we know that there's no current side effects and we're pretty confident that there will be none, but we can't promise you in 50 years your children aren't going to get cancer because of this, etc., whatever.
But then, of course, people just wouldn't get that.
Exactly. And I think that also kind of ties nicely into
trust within the government.
Trust within the government as a whole, yeah. I think people have lost faith in the government. They've lost faith in Boris, haven't they? You only have to look at Moonpig to see the cards. Have a good birthday, or don't, or do, or don't. No one trusts his ability to make decisions. When he gave the roadmap for us coming to normalcy, you know, everyone was, is it going to work? Some people were really optimistic about it, but I think the kind of feel across the nation was that this isn't going to pan out.
I mean, 100%. Yeah, I mean, like, from when we look at, it's funny because when you look at, like, what politics and what the like sort of social environment was in the UK before this pandemic in comparison to now, it actually feels like we're in a Marvel film.
So
we're talking about students at the moment. The effect on students throughout this pandemic has been astronomical, and it's not even about education, it's about food resources, about home resources, the things that schools do so much that isn't education. And I think we definitely saw this sort of Marvel film emulation through the fact that we've needed Marcus Rashford more than we have our own politicians just to like come and sort out food distribution.
So school meals is kind of really the microcosm for all of that, isn't it? The
100%.
Fact that it took a footballer to come in and tell the government that they were doing the wrong thing, and for the government to then turn around and be like, yeah, okay, well, we're just going to change what we do. And then in changing what we do, we're going to send these abominable packages of food to people and tell them
10 meals per child for 2 weeks.
That's, it's just, it's,
think
it's
about
two
it.
Meals for 5 days. It's not enough. And I think it completely summarises what the Conservative government are doing. They're missing the bigger picture entirely. They're missing the fact that, okay, you can give a kid 2 jacket potatoes, but they're stuck at home with nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe throw in something a bit nicer.
Yeah. I mean, this whole stitch in time saves nine sort of, like, approach to the pandemic is just, like, put a plaster on it.
It'll be fine. Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. I don't know how they didn't think that people were going to post a picture of what they'd been given and say anything. And it's so funny to think that, it's not funny at all, but horrible to think that if someone like Marcus Rashford, for example, hadn't spoken out,
nothing would have happened.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
And the fact that we need some sort of beacon of hope, some sort of Superman, like, I'm not sure that was supposed to be the point of democracy. No. I feel like we've lost it.
I couldn't agree more. I think when you think of, well, let's take it back to the empire. What did we say? We said that we were going to civilize people. We were going to spread this amazing democracy and we were going to give everyone freedom and hope. And we can't even provide meals for underprivileged kids in schools.
Like, yeah.
What is it?
I mean, we're failing a bit.
That's what I mean. It's ridiculous. And I think, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, economically, that's an economic effect of the pandemic is that the situation that people can't even eat necessarily. But, like, obviously, the social impact of not being able to be at schools is,
unbelievable.
Like, so huge. I mean, like, you said earlier on, speaking to me, that social awkwardness within children.
Oh, absolutely. I was reading this thing, and it's actually really interesting, the other day, and it was essentially about social awkwardness in children and social anxiety after the pandemic, and saying how a lot more older children are actually displaying younger
symptoms.
Attributes.
I'm not sure what the right word is.
Attributes of younger children. They're essentially
characteristics.
You have older children at 8 and 9 throwing temper tantrums, the equivalent that typically 2, 3, 4 year olds throw, because they're so frustrated, but they still don't have the vocabulary to describe how they're feeling, because this is an entirely new situation. They can't link this to anything. They have no words to explain the frustration and the fear and the worry.
There's no past experience to hark on.
Exactly. But. And I think it's terrifying for them. And I think that's why. And I think a lot of children are also, this study found that a lot of children, when they were actually reintroduced to other kids, so when they were seeing old friends, they were running and hiding behind their parents because they just were unable to interact and they didn't feel secure enough to do that. And I think that's been a massive impact.
Well, 100%.
Of the pandemic that I think a lot of people are not really talking about. I think the government aren't really talking about it or taking it even close to seriously enough.
No.
What do you think about the long-term effect this, do you reckon this will have?
It's really tricky because I suppose the whole argument for the past few months is, what's worse, having your kids out of education?
Yeah.
That being that kids are not supposed to be isolated. This is the most important part of their life for development.
Yeah, 100%.
They need social interaction. Or is it more important to shield their family and friends by not having them at school and therefore not spreading the virus?
Yeah.
This is a fucking tricky conversation to have.
Absolutely. And I think the government tried to hit the middle by doing, we'll do Zoom. But I just don't think that the government quite get that. Zoom's not enough. You know, for kids, especially for us older,
we've been in breakout rooms, we're at university.
Yeah, but also we understand that we can get interaction outside of the school environment. Like, to 4, 5, 6, 7 year olds, they don't quite get that. They don't have the freedom to just go down to the park in their free time with one other person.
Yeah.
And I think it's really hard because talking to people on Zoom and FaceTiming your friends continuously is boring. It's not the same. It's really, really not.
Yeah. I mean, so we've spoken a little bit about younger children now.
Yeah.
The impact on sort of like preschoolers and ETC.
Yeah.
But what about uni students now?
Wow.
Fucking hell.
Fucking hell.
That is a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, it's a new ball game, really. One word really is ignored. I think uni students have been ignored in policy. I think our calls for change have been ignored. Anything we're saying really just completely disregarded by the government. And I think this isn't new. You know, any uni students in second year will remember there were a lot of teacher strikes last year.
Mm.
And the government did nothing in terms of giving tuition fees back. So I didn't really expect much more from the government, which is actually pretty unfortunate.
You should
expect that your government will support you more than they do.
Yeah. It's very difficult. It's a really difficult one. I know that we've talked about this a lot. We have varying ideas on this as well as a topic. Because, like,
definitely.
I definitely feel like it's almost, I don't want to feel like it's a losing battle.
Yeah.
Because it's not. Nothing's ever a losing battle.
Yeah.
It's looking a bit peak.
Yeah.
Just because I'm looking at the situation and I understand the unis in the sense that, number one, before we came to university, they obviously couldn't say, look, for the foreseeable future, we don't even know whether you're going to be allowed in housing. We don't know whether we're going to be able to...
In-person lectures.
We don't know about refunds. We know as much as you, because not even the government knows.
No.
And like, I
that's the sad part though, isn't it? Yeah. Not even the government knows, and not even the government can tell them.
Exactly. And so I think I sympathise with them on that side, in the sense that when it comes to the rent strike, so up to, what was it, 50 to 55%?
I think 55 out of 140 universities in the UK have rent strikes.
Yes,
so that's good. I think the rent strikes really kicked off after the events in Manchester, didn't they? Students were fenced in to try and stop the spread of the virus. I think that really epitomised to all the other students how we were bottom of the food chain when it came to coronavirus regulations. They cared.
Within education.
Yeah, they don't really see the university education in the same light that they see school education. And you can even see with coming back, the government are prioritising certain subjects to have in-person teaching and in-person seminars, and others, politics, we're not even going back.
Yeah. And I think, like, I didn't rent strike, and Stevie rent strike.
Yeah, I'm a rent striker.
And the reason I didn't rent strike was primarily because in my mind I was sort of like, what wider scale benefit is there here? Simply because I was sort of like, as an adult, and I'm seeing the rest of uni students as adults as well. When we got that email, that acceptance email right before we came, that was sort of like, come back, but like, don't go into each other's flats. I already knew the tone of the year. Yeah. You know, I could feel where this was going.
Absolutely.
And I took the risk and I was like, I'd rather go to uni than not. And so there are the people that read that email and went, no, I don't want to be here unless this works.
Yeah.
And then there were people like me who could already see sort of what was going on and then still chose it. And I think my thing was the people who were rent striking who had known that this was going to happen, like, I think my argument was the government's not going to fund the university for rent strike. Yeah. They're not going to give any money to the university, which means I didn't see how the rent strike was going to do anything other than potentially bankrupting the university. So, like, that was my argument.
Yeah.
However, I still don't necessarily back my own argument.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do have to disagree with your argument, because I am the people you're talking about. I knew coming back we weren't going to get the complete freedom, but I also expected to have more than this. I expected for the university to respect my privacy.
Yeah.
I expected for there to be a certain level of support, which to some extent I have received. I've received a lot of support, but that's within my own department, not from the university as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that is 99,000,000% accredited to the heads of both my departments in global studies and in politics, who are fantastic in providing that support.
Mm.
But the university is not. And I don't know, I feel I'm so angry, and the university don't listen when we speak. They don't listen when we write emails. I think the only way that they're going to listen is if we strike. And I do genuinely believe we deserve a reduction on our...
I agree.
On our rent. But I think we also deserve a reduction overall, aside from housing.
Yeah.
When we first came at the very, very beginning of the year, I'm talking September, We weren't promised this.
No.
You know,
no,
I was promised far more than I got, even in first term. I was promised more face-to-face hours than I received. Yeah. I was
Which
told,
is none, by the way. We received none.
None. I was told I was going to get far more by the university than I got. I was told it was essential to come onto campus and live here so that I could have access to the contact hours, etc., which I never needed. So I signed up to pay my rent when I essentially didn't even need to. I think the least the university can do is listen to our demands and respond, which at the moment they're still not really doing. So I think for as long as the university fails to listen, students are going to continue to rent strike, because really that's the only way that we can get our voice heard.
Yeah, I agree with that argument in the sense that, like, the next stop for us to get attention is the university.
Exactly. And
so that makes sense.
Who we really need attention from is the government.
Yeah.
We need the government to significantly reduce our tuition fees for this year. We need the government to
basically
respond
to our
demands.
Basically, we need the 1% to give up a bit of money, because I'm just looking at this and I'm going,
it's quite
okay,
ironic, isn't it?
The uni
really
goes to the government, and the government's got no money left, so then the government's not going to be able to give to the uni, then the uni's not going to give to us, and we're not going to get anything. So basically, 1%, where you at?
Why have you got everything and still... I'm getting a bit of repeat of this. Have you heard this trickle down before?
Yeah.
The trickle stops. And I think we're back in the same situation of the trickle is trickle, really.
Yeah,
it's
There is no trickle.
No, there is none. There is no steady downflow of money coming to our students. We're just, however, saying that, if there are any students listening to this, you know, it's going to be all right. We're going to get there. And if you're on my side, keep rent striking. If you're not rent striking, find a rent strike and get involved.
Stand for what you believe in, man.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've spoken about the pandemic, the government responses, the effect on children, the effect on university students. So we sort of thought that for the last sort of 10 minutes, we'd sort of discuss
life after lockdown.
Life after lockdown.
Kind of what what is life after lockdown?
What the fuck
is life after lockdown?
Because I'm not socially awkward under any way. I have anxiety, but it's never been social.
Exactly the same.
However, like, the other day, I was going out for a walk with someone that I hadn't seen for a while, and the anxiety, man, genuine anxiety, but like, I was just like sweating, and I just felt peaked, do you know what I mean?
I think this is shocking. Absolutely, I agree. I've never really been nervous about holding a conversation with someone, if that makes sense. Everyone always says you can talk the wall off, if necessary, I can talk, but for the first time in my life, kind of halfway through the first time of uni, when you start to meet other people one-on-one, I thought, can I hold a conversation? Like, do I even remember how to hold a conversation?
Yeah, yeah. Like, are these skills that are naturally born within us as children, ironically,
refer back to the podcast,
are not really carrying through? That's another shocking point for kids. Like, are they going to be even more
socially awkward?
Uni? Yeah.
Oh, I do think it's going to lead to a lot of children not wanting to share, not being phobic of germs, not wanting to go out. I think when it comes across at university, it's going to translate into not going on nights out, not sharing drinks, not going into the public bathrooms. And I think,
yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, following on from that, the charity Young Minds, I was reading some things from that they published recently, and they had a small article about why people don't want lockdown to end, and talking about their anxieties, talking about phobias, whether it was that they didn't like public spaces anymore, it was too intense, too crowded, too bustly, or they didn't know how to communicate socially anymore. Mm-hmm. And what I found really shocking after reading this was I realised that all of their resources, the key is in the name, Young Minds, but like, they were all 16 and 17 year old kids.
Yeah, young kids.
That no longer wanted lockdown to end. And I don't understand, that's so shocking, guys. Because think about when you were 16 or 17, okay? And think about the kids that graduated from A-levels at the end of last year and who still haven't gone out to the pub, still haven't gone clubbing, still haven't been legally allowed to drink in public.
Don't have been to a smoking area in a club.
Literally, to not want to go out and party with your mates.
To not want to experience that is
so
terrifying.
Scary.
It's more terrifying because to some extent I kind of understand it almost.
Yeah.
Like, I want lockdown.
We're not
to end.
Condemning it at all.
No, no.
It might be a positive thing, but it's definitely different.
It's definitely different. And I don't think any way to come out of this is the right way.
No.
But I think that there almost is a right way. I think we can't come out of this and be terrified of life. And disclaimer, this is only my own opinion. I don't mean any offence by this to anyone, but I do think quite a lot of people have become scared of life during the lockdown. And I think when life reopens, I hope everyone can adjust almost back. I think as a nation, as a society, we adjusted very well into the lockdown. Okay, a lot of people didn't really follow the rules, but I think all in all, people adjusted well. And I hope everyone adjusts well back out. And if it takes some people longer than others, then so be it. But I just don't want it to be 10 years and everyone's still terrified to share a tissue or scared to talk to a stranger through fear of germs.
Yeah, 100%. I think also when looking at what's going to happen after this, an interesting point is, so the government hasn't supported anyone that much going in.
Not really,
there wasn't
no.
a huge amount. And I'd like to preface this with, although mental health disorders have been around for a very long time, I think we can all agree that mental health, the environment of mental health has changed drastically over the past 10 years.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And
absolutely.
The government hasn't yet caught up with that change.
No.
And I can allow for that leeway. Of course, not everyone's going to be supported mentally because 10 years ago, people weren't even thinking about that.
And I think almost at the beginning of the lockdown, when we were going into it, everyone thought this was going to be 2-3 weeks.
Well, exactly. There was no plan for supporting
people. No one thought this would be going on for a year, did they?
Yeah, but it's gone on for a year now. It's changed everyone's lives.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to know what the government's going to do to support people.
Boris, if you're listening, we want to know.
I want to know. Just sling me a DM.
Yeah, just
let me know how you're going to support us coming out of this. Because I'm not saying that you should, but you should.
Yeah, I'm saying you should, especially us young people. Like,
but I think people are going to need help adjusting back to school.
Everyone,
kids are going to need help.
Yeah, but even parents, like, going back to work and then managing getting their kids to school. It's like,
and also guidance counselors, school counselors. You're going to have to be. I mean, I don't want to say that guidance counselors and school counselors aren't good, because I know that some of the best people in the world are school counselors.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I've never had particularly helpful school counsellors,
no.
even in the period of time in my life where I would have really benefited from having a good school counsellor.
Yeah.
I think it would be so amazing if the government put a little bit more money into...
A little bit more time as well. A little bit more research into...
Yeah, not come in one afternoon, little Ralph, and tell me why you're feeling a bit depressed and then don't ever knock on my door again.
And feel as though next time you come to me, I'll laugh you out the room. Yeah,
yeah.
I genuinely have a door open policy. That's what you want to hear.
We need like a mental health support for people going back into institutions that they haven't been in for
a
year.
Absolutely. And I think even... kind of bigger than that, going back into society, we're going to need help. Our society has been through our phones, whether people want to admit it or not. Over 50% of our daytime, we're on our phones. Over 50% of the time that we are away,
the other 50% is in our own house.
Yeah. Fuck.
That's horrible.
It's terrifying, isn't it? So I think to then have to go back and face-to-face interact with everyone, with colleagues, with life, it's going to be daunting.
Yeah.
And obviously we have our phones with us. And obviously you can just mindlessly scroll on Instagram if that's what you need to get you through your break time. But it's just quite a terrifying thought, isn't it, really? That we're going to have to go back from doing nothing every day to waking up, you know, making your breakfast, making your lunch, going to work or uni or whatever it is that you do. And then coming back and doing all the things you do in the evening and then going to bed and then waking up and then doing it again. It's...
Yeah, and I don't know whether, like...
It's exciting, though.
It is exciting.
I mean, we at the same
go,
time,
there's
definitely.
So many ways that we could go with this section of the podcast. I mean, we could even go into things such as, like, how productivity has changed, whether this is going to influence capitalism. But we're not going to do that in this episode.
No, absolutely not.
But, yeah, I mean, I think we've definitely agreed that times have changed.
Times have changed.
And we're excited to see what that is.
And I am excited. As much as I'm scared,
yeah,
I am also unbelievably excited for what's to come.
Yeah, nothing good is not scary.
No, absolutely. So on that note, we hope we've taken you on a nice journey over the fence with us.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming and listening to our first episode. Feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at over.the.fence.podcast.
Yeah. So we publish bi-weekly. So
On Fridays.
So
and
chill with us in 2 weeks. Thank you.
And goodbye.